is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at World Sweeper, and I have on the line with me Tom Dixon. He is the president of Carolina Sweepers. They're located in Cary, North Carolina, which is a suburb of Raleigh. They are the featured contractor for December 2012, so congratulations on that. First off, Tom.
Thank you, Ranger. I appreciate that. It's an honor, particularly from you, since I consider you the guru of sweeping.
That's nice of you to say, but as you know, we're fans of each other. We've known each other, as far as I know, since you got into business. You have a little more to add to that, I know, from our conversation prior to getting the recording going. If you would, talk about how you got into this business and what prompted you, maybe what your efforts were in deciding to enter the business, what it's been for you.
Yeah, okay. I got into the business in November of 2000. I'd held a job as an architect for about 25 years, and I found myself unemployed and did not want to get back into doing what I was doing and looking for a change. And a close friend in South Carolina had a sweeper business, and I went down, spent a couple days with him, you know, observing his operation and talking to him about it. And then I came back in October and started searching on the Internet, and number of searches ended up with your name in it, and so I read everything I could read in that and gleaned names from it, and then I started corresponding through the Internet with you, and you gave me a tremendous amount of information on you know, how to get started, how to do certain things, and why cleaning parking lots is important. And then you also referred me to a couple other names in the business, such as Gail Holzman and Gabe Vital, and I called all those folks and corresponded with those, and decided after hearing everything from them and meeting with my friend in South Carolina, it seemed like the right thing to do. I had also called a number of property managers, getting a sense of could the market handle another sweeper company. And I got positive feedback that that was a very doable thing, and what they were looking for was quality. There were a lot of guys in the ditch slugging it out over money, cutting bids real close, and so. But they said they were looking for somebody with quality, so that's where I stake my claim. In 10 years, I've grown from 1 to 13 trucks, standing firm on the idea that people want a quality sweeping job, so that's what we've done. It all goes back to property managers saying that it's a very doable thing for another company, from encouragement from yourself and Gabe and Gail, a couple others, and even the property managers became a great source to, once I'd gotten a truck and gotten started, I called them back and said, remember you and I talked about the company. So I used that as an intro with them, and it opened some doors up because they were interested in the quality. They were the ones that talked to me about looking for a quality sweeper. So I just took that and ran with it.
You're a poster child for doing things the right way. You know, I know that from having conversed with you through the years, and we get together and talk at least a couple times a year.
Yeah.
And you do, you know, in addition to sweeping, a variety of other services, which helps, and your architectural background, I'm sure, helps in terms of professionalism and really knowing what quality means as well. You're very articulate, and that has to help as well. Let's go back to the beginning, though, a little bit. What did you end up with as a sweeper when you got started, and then what do you run today? Do you run a diverse fleet or same manufacturer, or how does that work?
Okay. I started with a Temco 210. Several sweepers that I talked to, I asked them about their equipment, what type of manufacturer they used and why. I got the sense that between a Temco and a Schwarz, you can't go wrong with either one, and so I took a shot with a Temco. After having researched Schwarz and Temco, there was a dealer about 2 hours from here, and I went and test drove a Temco 210, and it's a 2000. I still have it, still use it to sweep with. Since then, I've gone to using Nighthawks. A couple of reasons I went to Nighthawks is less mechanical issues, but it does not have an auxiliary engine, so there's less mechanical concerns there. Another big point for me was the fact that the screens inside the hopper do not clog, as they did with my Temco 210, and I found that I could sweep longer without having to dump the hopper or clear the screen. They were better on fuel. I get better mileage out of the Nighthawk because it has a single engine and uses the hydraulic system to operate the blower fan. And so those are the primary reasons I went with Nighthawk. There, another reason that's real important these days is they cost less. I get them with a stainless steel hopper, so I don't have to worry about rust, and I can keep them as long as I need to and extend the depreciating life on it and then continue operating them without having to make monthly payments on them. I like the Nighthawks, and that's what I run exclusively is particularly that I like are the cab overs. I like those because of visibility, and I like the fact that they come in diesel instead of a gas engine. I do have conventional cabs, a couple of conventional cabs for parking decks, but I really like the diesel cab overs because of the visibility you get and the fact that they are diesel.
Those are good points for, I think, everybody to consider. Now, you're not doing construction cleanup, though. Your model is strictly parking areas and commercial properties, right?
That's correct. I do have a Schwarz A4000 that I use, and it's not primarily for construction sweeping. We sweep industrial lots with it that require more power than a parking lot sweeper, but not so much as something like a Temco 600. So it's that kind of intermediate use that we get out of it. We do get called to do some highway cleanup, and we do enough work with it that it pays for it and it makes us some money, but we don't really pursue construction cleanup just because of the way the workload fluctuates. You get very little notice on that kind of work and kind of yanks people's schedules around. So we decided not to ramp up to go after construction sweeping as a full-time pursuit, but we have done enough work where we keep the A4000 busy.
Mm-hmm. That's a real nice mid-range sweeper, no CDL needed. Your same guys can run it, and that seems like it would be a real good addition to any fleet when you have multiple parking lot sweepers, because let's face it, that's a parking lot sweeper too if you want.
Yeah.
Did you start with just sweeping when you got into it, or did you know early on that you wanted to do a variety of other services? Because you certainly today are a full-service property maintenance organization. How did that flow?
It started out, we were going to offer additional services. When I started, I had the Temco 210. I had a pressure washer made by Landa that has a diesel burner on it. And I started with a bucket lift that I bought from a rental company that had too many of them on their yard, and they weren't leasing them out or renting them out enough to justify keeping them on the lot. So I bought one of theirs and still have it. And we use it for banners, pole light. From the very beginning, we were going to offer other services. Even some of the services that we offer now are ones that we hadn't even thought of when we started, because we have found that property managers will ask you for anything and everything if they know that you can handle it. And so we do everything from installing Christmas trees and pressure washing and asphalt repairs and just a number of things that on the outside of a shopping center that are needed to keep it looking safe and clean.
And you found that to be that expansion to be the model that really works best for you. Do you have any clients that say, no, we don't want, or I guess, of course, you would have some that don't want anything besides sweeping, but would you say the majority of your clients by far you do a variety of work for?
Yes. We look at sweeping a couple different ways. Number one, it's our bread and butter, but it's also a means to get our foot in the door with property managers to do other work. The way that has worked for us is that through sweeping, they get familiar with us and they know us, they grow to like us, and then they trust us. And when we get to that third point, they're willing to ask us to do anything for them, even to the point where they may have had a favorite concrete guy they used to have, but now they use us. And maybe they had a striping company that they've used in the past, but now they use us. What we have found is that because we are a purchaser of a large amount of striping, a large amount of asphalt work, a large amount of concrete work, a large amount of painting, that we can do those services as well as others and get volume discounts from our subcontractors because we are a big customer to them, that we can then put our markup on it and then still deliver it to the property manager at market rate or lower. And that's part of an appeal to them, is that they don't have to worry that because I'm the middleman that they're getting something at a higher price. They realize that I'm such a big buyer of those kind of services that I can provide it to them at that market rate. And still, they have my eyes and my expertise on site when things are going on. So it saves them from having to get out of the office and spend their time on it. Because they trust us, they know that I'm taking care of it for them.
I think that's good validation of a point that I've long spoke about editorially, which is when you approach quality subcontractors in an area, everybody knows you have a significant outlay for marketing. And when you're bringing the business in the door to them, then they can afford to take some of that marketing budget and point it to you for your oversight,
yeah,
you know, activities. That makes perfect sense. And then, of course, the sell, and I'm talking not to you so much here, but to our listeners, is the part of the sell that you have to your customer is that they can go out to get their striping done, let's say, every 2 years or 3 years or whatever,
yeah,
it is they need. And that's how much business they're offering to that striping business. But
yeah,
when they work through you, then you're having striping projects with that same company, you know, every week, and they're not,
yeah,
going to chance screwing up on when Carolina Sweepers is on the management team and control that. One other thing I want to mention is that I would suspect that those opportunities came to you exactly because you're not in the ditch at low prices, that,
yeah,
in fact your model is quality.
Yeah, we tell the folks that we bid with and our customers that we're different, and we're different for a reason. It's because we wanted to separate ourselves from the other guys, because if I got into the sweeping business operating like the other guys operate, and that's focused on the money issue, then I would be one among many. For example, there are uncountable number of landscape companies in our area, and I just find it difficult for them to, I would conceive that it's difficult for them to market themselves to property managers, because there's so many and it's hard to distinguish yourself among the competition. And in what I do, there are a more limited number of sweeping companies. They have the same business model, and I chose consciously to provide quality because that's just the way I do things, and it's a reflection of who I am, so therefore it's easy for me to do it because it's a natural way of thinking. That's why I went that route. Even in today's economy, we still hold claim to being the quality sweeper. At a time when the economy is very soft, you know, I was concerned that it might be a difficult time for us, but we're continuing to grow in our sweeping business. So standing on a rock and standing firm in doing so has paid off for us.
Well, that's certainly a good validation of going forward in that respect. Is there anything you can say about, and I don't want you to give away trade secrets here, but is there anything you can say about your approach to subcontractors in these different fields, whether it's striping or seal coating or whatever it is? You know, how do you approach them? How do you decide who it is that you want to approach in the first place?
Yeah. Some of it is you've got your ear to the ground and you know folks around and you kind of get some leads from them. You also look around to see who's doing things. You kind of know who's out there just from talking with different people, being connected through a network. But when I meet with a potential subcontractor, you know, I talk to them about what my objectives are. There are some must-have qualities, and there are some nice-to-have qualities. And among the must-have qualities is dependability, good work, and not bruising my name. By that I mean if how they perform is a reflection on me, and I can't have them over-promising and not delivering. There's that conversation you have on the front end that lays out what is expected. We talk about pricing. We talk about what their specifications are in terms of how they provide, what materials they use and how they provide it. And I'll use striping as an example. I insist on Sherwin-Williams traffic marking paint and no other substitutes. And I insist on blacking out existing stencils so that when the other stencils put on top, there's no bleed through. And I insist on no overspray. And I insist on straight lines. And so once I've had that conversation with them, it's understood what I'm after. Before I talk to them, I look at some of their projects before they know that I'm looking at their projects. For example, I may have a property manager that I have lunch with, and they say that they use Acme striping and have used them in the past. And so I go look at some of their shopping centers to see how the striping looks and see if I like it or not. And, you know, once you start looking at these things, it becomes a second nature as to what you're looking for. And so some of it requires that you have experience doing it in terms of understanding if this guy's the right guy or not. One thing I don't do is I never beat my subcontractors up on pricing. If they tell me it cost $1,000 to do this, I'm not going to squeeze them to $950 or $900 because I want them to make money off of me. And the reason that's important is when I call them, they'll take my call instead of letting it go to the voicemail and delay for a couple of days. Something else that does give me two Ranger, which is real important, is I get priority in scheduling. It's rare these days that a property manager will call and say they need something and say, by the way, you can get to it in 3 or 4 weeks. You know, they pretty much want it done now, and if not now, pretty close to now. That gives me some flexibility in scheduling where I can provide that, whereas, and I'll use asphalt as an example. I got a call or an email today from a property manager who's in Florida. He's got a pothole in the drive lane, and most asphalt companies here are about 2 to 3 weeks out on work. I'm going to get it done within 3 business days because of my ability to have input on the guy's schedule, because I am I'm his big customer. In fact, I'm his biggest customer. That helps in consolidating your subcontractors, is they know they're guaranteed X amount of work a year, and they take care of me, and I take care of them because, again, I don't beat them up on their pricing.
Have you gained business back from them as well?
There are some that I do get recommendations from or leads from. Now, that's paid off both ways.
Well, that makes sense, and you can imagine that listeners out there, that the Florida property manager that you're able to do that for is not going to very likely, with a 5% increase in your sweeping price or another contractor coming in with a lesser price, they're not going to be all that interested in taking their call.
No, they're not. I mentioned earlier that sweeping is our bread and butter, but also gets our foot in the door. And again, when you get to that point where they know you, they like you, and they trust you, they'll call you for everything. And so over a period of time, you're their go-to person. They'll call you for anything. When you get to that point with them, that it's difficult for them to let you go. They like my work, and they don't want to lose that quality work. Number two, I'm always fair with them in pricing. My philosophy is I want to make a living, not a killing. I don't have any squabbles over pricing from our property managers. There's really no reason for them to get rid of me because I do good work. They trust me. I give them fair pricing. I send them photographs and all those sort of things that make their job easier. It saves them trips from having to come up here if they know that I'll go over and look at something for them and send them pictures and tell them what's going on, and or if a road's being closed on the side of their shopping center and how's that impacting the center, rather than them having to come up from Florida or down from Pennsylvania or wherever. They trust my opinion of it.
That's huge. That's very critical. Can you think of anything that were real unusual requests that you've gotten through those years?
We've had to remove dead dogs from sidewalks. It's one of the weird ones. And not probably beautiful to say, but we've had to remove human waste from sidewalks. We've done some odd things. We've had to dismantle homeless shelters in the back of a shopping center, which is not this morally comfortable thing to do, but I work for the shopping center folks. We've done some fairly unpleasant stuff. I have personally been inside dumpsters, jumping up down on the trash to compact it so that I could empty my sweeper truck in it.
Those are memorable nights, huh?
Yes. I can tell you, there's nothing I ask my guys to do that I haven't already done. I have fond memories of some of those things. They're funny now. At the time, they may not have been as much fun, but, time changes those things.
I thought that you always just striped over the dog, but the rest of it makes perfect sense. You're talking about your employees a little bit. Let's talk about them. How do you handle getting new employees these days? We have a lot more options available to us, and training them or picking the ones that you think will last. How does that shake out there?
Our primary resource on new employees is through Craigslist. We find that we get a much higher quality candidate than we did when we advertised in newspapers or put the word of mouth out. Craigslist, we depend on that for 95% of it. When we get in a crunch, we're on a fairly busy highway, 4-lane highway, and we've got a sign that we put out front that says third shift workers needed. We have them fill out an application. We review the applications weekly, and if someone catches our eye, we'll call them in for an interview. They pass the interview with a set of questions that we have prepared for them. We'll consider them for hire. We have first shift people, which is the 8:30 to 5:30 guys that we have, and when they come in for an interview, we've even hand them a drawing from a coloring book and give them some crayon and tell them to color the picture. What that does for us is to see what kind of attitude they've got. You know, if they're willing to do something as menial as coloring a picture in a cartoon, we figure they're pretty flexible and they've got a good attitude. And so we've used that as a means to help weenie the pool down candidates.
That's very innovative.
The interesting thing is the first guy that we used that on happened to have had 4 years of art in college, and so he did a very good job, and he set the standard pretty high.
Do you have that framed on the wall there?
I think Stephen's got it in his notebook of memorable moments. Yeah.
Now, I know that you're not CDL drivers, and so you're not subject to the federal laws on communications while traveling in a truck, but have you made any changes based on the research that's come up about that? How do you communicate?
Yeah, we started
stay
years
safe.
Ago with our guys, telling them that when you're driving, you're not talking on a cell phone, that if you need to talk on a cell phone, the truck's in park, and it's just something that we always insisted on safety first. It's, you know, my biggest fear when I started the business 12 years ago, my biggest fear was not getting accounts and keeping accounts. My biggest fear was getting sued into oblivion. So I've always been cat-like nervous over safety issues. I don't want my guys to get hurt, and I don't want them to hurt anybody else. We've always pushed the idea of safety first. For example, if they're in a shopping center at night and something doesn't look very safe, and I tell them, don't get out of the truck, and we'll just have to come back during the day and deal with getting it clean. Their safety is paramount. We don't want them talking on the cell phone because they may get distracted and hurt themselves or someone else. It really didn't affect us. We already had things in place for that.
Ever so sensible to do. And do you just run an operator in your trucks, or do you run an operator and a backpack blower?
We've got an operator and a backpack blower in each truck, and a couple reasons for that is we find that we can get more done with two rather than one. I know there's a lot of guys out there that have one guy in a truck, but another reason to have two is they can keep an eye on each other when they're working. You know, one of our safety deals is that the sweeper driver and the backpack blower stay within eyesight of each other so that he can get over there in just a moment's notice in case somebody comes out of the shadows or whatever. That's the primary reason we have two, is we find it's more productive for us and for safety concerns for the guys.
I know when I first began in the industry and writing stories, unbelievably, almost 25 years ago, the contractors then were pretty much dual, you know, have a backpack blower operator and an operator. And the philosophy was, you know, geez, I've paid $35,000 or $40,000 for this piece of equipment. I don't want to leave it sit there idling or just sitting there, because that's my capital investment. And I think that makes even more sense today when $35,000 doesn't exactly buy a new sweeper. So.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I priced a new sweeper yesterday, and they've gone up $20,000 since I bought my first one. And then, I mean, that's keeping within the same manufacturer.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that, you know, emissions requirements have changed. Price of steel has changed. The technology has changed. I'm not complaining about the manufacturer's pricing. I just make note of the fact that they've increased that much in the 12 years. Another thing, having two guys in a truck instead of one, is that if I'm operating 13 trucks now, I'd probably have to increase that 8 to 10 to be able to handle what I'm doing. And if you think about that in terms of what a sweeper costs, you know, if you just say it's a round number of 10, you know, you're looking at $750,000 in additional equipment, and the money's just not there for that for me.
Right. You can hire several backpack blower operators for the payment on a sweeper, that's for sure.
So that, I think, has changed in the last 12 years, too. And I remember when I started, there were a lot of two guys in a truck thing, and then it shifted over where there's one guy in a truck. But because sweepers have gone up so much in the last 5 years, I think it's been the biggest part of the increase. That makes the argument for the economics of two guys in a truck more valid than it was, say, 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, in fact, I would encourage those listening, if you are just running one operator in a truck, or even if you're, you know, running two and you want to do an assessment and make sure you're doing it the right way, is to have your operators segment out how much time they're spending blowing the property and doing hand-picked cleanup,
mm-hmm.
and how much they're actually doing sweeping, and then run a numbers analysis to see what that it might be costing you if you're having just an operator in a truck. If it's even a wash, then I would propose that safety issues really bring you over the top in terms of having two guys in a truck, because it is less safe out there these days, too.
The way we sweep, the fact that's coming out for me is by the time we do the blowing and the changing of the bags and the hand picking, is that the sweeper has about 10 to maybe 12% more time to sweep up after the blower has finished his stuff. But so when the sweeper has gotten up all the stuff the blower has put out there for him to get, then there's probably just maybe 10 to 12% more time that the sweeper requires, because we insist on hand picking. That's a pretty high priority for us, is that naturally sweeping and blowing is a fundamental got to have kind of proposition. But the hand picking, what we have found around here is that a lot of the guys don't do that, and that separates us. We put trash bags in the drive lane instead of on the sidewalk, and that prevents folks from having to call us. And so, you know, our guys are trained specifically for what they're supposed to do, rather than a driver having to know every single thing the blower does, and the blower has not having to know what the driver does. They have less to be concerned about, so they can do their own job. And we found training folks that it's easier for them to remember, I'm a sweeper driver, this is what I do. And the guy says, I'm a blower operator, this is what I do. And there's no commingling of that.
Cover, if you would, because I think that wasn't clear, putting bags in the drive lane rather than on the sidewalk. What did you mean by that?
When you pull the trash bags from the cans and you tie them up, rather than setting them on the sidewalk for the sweeper driver to come around and pick up, we set them on the asphalt pavement in case they're leaking Coke or coffee or anything like that, so that those stains don't stain the sidewalks. Because when I go through different shopping centers, I look to see if there are stains around the trash cans, and I see that a fair amount. And it's because when the cans are changed, those bags are put on the concrete sidewalk rather than on the pavement, because it doesn't really matter much if there's any kind of those liquids that stain the pavement, but it does matter if it stains the sidewalk.
Yeah, very good point. Although that will impact your pressure washing business, you know that.
Hopefully by that point I've got that locked up too.
Let's see some other things that we might talk about here. Let's talk about how you sound like you have a group of pretty happy customers out there. How do you contact them, keep track of them, you know, keeping their at the forefront of their mind that, hey, you're out there?
Yeah, a lot of it is email. That's property managers are busy. They just want stuff handled, and that's one reason they use, hey, I'll get time to do this. I know he can handle it. I stay on the phone with them. It has to be a conscious thing, because that's the first thing that can slip away from you is phone contact. But email is the biggest way to keep in touch with them. I have a projects manager. He stays in touch with them on a regular basis. But the thing is, we do other projects for the vast majority of our property managers, so it's just through natural business contacts that we stay in touch with each other. That's the primary thing, is they need stuff done, and we let them know we can do it and when it's been done. So that's probably the biggest way that we stay in touch with them.
Well, I heard you talk about using digital photos and so forth, and that makes such a big difference. Do you find that having email communication back and forth in terms of, here's the problem, do you want me to handle it? They come back and say yes at this price, and then they come back and say yes, handle it at that price via email. Is that enough of an implied contract to basically work?
Or do you? I love email for that reason, because I'll tell them we can do it for this much, and they say click reply. So I've got the string going, and I saved the email, and just as I was doing a little bit earlier, is I couldn't remember how much I had quoted to paint a concrete floor for a property manager, and I went to my email, and there it was. And I have their approval saying, yeah, proceed with it. I'd like to get this done. And so we've got that backup on it. Not that I don't trust them, but it's I don't trust my own memory more than anything.
And that makes sense, and that is exactly the same thing that's going on with busy property managers too. Because a lot of times they may recall a different number, or maybe they got a different number from some other contractor or something. But when you have that email trail, I really encourage people to use that as much as possible.
Because I'm just a nervous cat just by nature. I'll always print a copy of that final string and put it in a file for whatever reason. If something happens to email, or if I get absent-minded and don't save it, you know, at least if I always print it and I've got a printed copy in the file. I'm probably a little obsessive about that point.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good place to be obsessive. Makes perfect sense to do. Certainly until the project's completed and the bill's paid and so forth, but also to have as a reference to look back and see what you charged to paint that concrete floor 2 years ago or 3 years ago. You can keep track of that too, because paint is going up in price and labor is going up in price and those kinds of things.
A lot of our customers are comfortable with operating off of email. Some of them have different accounting procedures that require they have a quote in a formal proposal. Then they will sign off on that proposal, you know, with the signature, and either email it back or fax it. But the way their accounting procedures operate, they have to have a written proposal. But the majority of them, they're comfortable operating off of email.
Let's change track completely here. And with your bucket truck, do you do a lot of Christmas decorations or not?
Yeah, we're just finishing up the busy season on putting up ornaments. We hang banners, we hang wreaths, we hang ornaments. We install Christmas trees and, you know, the big ones with the guy wires. And so we're, today is Thursday, yesterday we finished up all those installations. So our bucket lift helps with that. It's for example, when you do pole light changes and kind of your day-to-day stuff, it's nice to have the Christmas installations, which is a nice shot in the arm to that at the end of the year. And then the nice thing about that is that the same folks that put them up are the same folks that get to take them down, and that's us. So it gives us a little surge, you know, twice a year.
Does the bucket truck pay for itself in the rest of the year with pole light changeouts and that sort of thing?
It does. Yeah, it's and the sweet thing about that is it paid for itself after about 3 or 4 years. It paid for itself. So now there's no payment on it, and it, you know, it's all bottom line, added to the bottom line. So it's been a real good investment,
That's always, to me, seemed like such an obvious investment for a contractor to make, is a bucket truck, because you're the one that's going to see the lights are out even.
Yeah. Yeah, and we do monthly lighting inspections as a part of our sweeping operation. It's, you know, the driver and the blow operator will go around with a checklist and identify which lights are out if they are operated by or owned by the power company, because they'll have numbers on them, or we'll identify them on a site map, which ones are out. So, and we send that monthly report to the property managers, and the vast majority of them say, go and take care of it. So that's a sweet thing. And another thing about the bucket lift is that when insurance inspectors come to shopping centers, they need to get on top of the buildings, and they generally don't like to climb, most of them actually, don't like to climb the roof access ladders, because they've got a clipboard in their hand and they're scaling a ladder and they're 20-something feet above a concrete slab, and they get real uncomfortable with it. So property managers hire us to come out with a bucket lift and get them up on the top of the building, you know, that way. So there's periodic things that happen that that keep it, you know, we probably use it three days a week for different things. So it's been very useful.
Well, I could sure see where. And so I can tell that you do some things in-house, and there's some of the asphalt maintenance items that appear that you subcontract. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, what you do in-house. Do you do pressure washing? Do you do signage upkeep or parking bumpers or any of that?
Yeah, we do a lot of that in-house. Our pressure washing, signage installation, or even signage removal from facades. We install bollards in-house. We do small concrete jobs in-house. I draw a blank on trying to think of all the different things. We open up tenants' vacancies for prospective tenants to look in them. We clean out vacant tenant spaces. We clean up damage that may have occurred in the shopping center overnight. You know, we do install, you know, stop signs, no loitering signs.
Well, those are the kinds of things that, to me, every contractor should do, and I think that makes, you know, perfectly good sense. When you're a sweeping contractor and somebody else is putting a 4x4 in the ground and putting a sign on it,
and
especially if you're calling them in to do that, that doesn't make sense. Same thing with tenant cleanouts. I mean, how hard is that? You can, you know, you look at it, it's either clean or it isn't.
Yeah.
Just like a parking lot, it's either clean or it isn't.
Yeah, and, you know, something else we do in-house, we bought a small jetting machine, which we use periodically. We bought a grinding machine so that we can grind the concrete when there's differences in the elevation. And that came out of the fact that we got requests to do that repeatedly, and it didn't make sense to pay somebody to go out and do $200 worth of work when we could do it in-house and keep the money, you know, in-house rather than sending it out the door. So a lot of things that we do has grown from increased requests for things, and as we've grown, we've added more services just because we have a bigger base requesting those services. In the beginning, we started with pressure washing and using the bucket lift for various things, but as our customer base grew, the variety of requests grew, and so, you know, there's a balance on whether we buy the equipment or where we farm it out, and it really depends on what's the best way I can provide it to my customer. Because, you know, customers know general market rates of stuff, you know, and if I charge $600 for something that they know was a $300 item, you know, I don't blame them. I'd squawk, too. And so the best way for me to provide that is to find a way to get it to them at what they think the price ought to be or what they have experienced in the past it ought to be. And that's what the grinder has done, is we can provide that same service at a fair price. Rather than a minimum charge, because everybody has a minimum charge.
I think that's good information to add. And I think, you know, I encourage all the sweeping contractors out there to think about, you know, what other services are there that you could do, you know, most easily. I guess the one that's always at the top of the list is large item removal, or, you know, the dead dog, the pet waste, whatever, human waste. But from there, I mean, everybody has to have a pressure washer to clean your sweeper every day. So, you know, how tough can it be to pressure wash?
That's always a good place to start is with a pressure washing unit. You know, it's there are a lot of guys out there knocking on the doors of property managers trying to get their foot in the door so they can talk to them about pressure washing. But there are a lot of pressure washers out there, and it's difficult for them to differentiate themselves from the other guys, particularly if a property manager already has some of they use. But if, again, they know you and they like you and they trust you, and you say, by the way, Bill, I'd love to do your pressure washing for you. Do you need any, if you got that coming up anytime soon, and so I can show you what we can do. And more likely than not, they're going to say, in the back of their mind, they may think, well, I've got somebody, but they also may say, well, that means I've just got one guy to call on this stuff, you know, and, you know, I deal with him on this, and he's been good, let me deal with him on that. So it opens the door up and expands your revenue base, simply because, again, there's so much value in that relationship with a property manager. Again, to know you, to like you, and to trust you. That's the biggest investment you can make with the greatest return on it. You know, and it is investment. You have to put time into it and effort, but it'll pay off dividends. And, you know, in my marketing brochure, I have in there that we want a personal and a business relationship with our property managers, and it's not a marketing hype. It's, we look for people that we like to work with. When you have to jump through hoops to make things happen, it's nice to know that that person knows what you're going through, or that they respect what you're doing and appreciate what you're doing, and no matter how big you get, they've still got the owner's attention.
Well, one of the things that I think is not given enough thought with many contractors or any contractors that are in the low bid model is that you're going to have more trouble with those contractors or with those property managers, because you're doing a low level of service. They're going to definitely have, even if that's what the property manager is willing to pay for, they're going to definitely have some complaints from their tenants.
Yeah.
And, you know, half the time the property manager will send the tenant on to you to complain because they know they're only spending $30 a sweep, and so
yeah,
they know what you're going to tell them. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
maybe you can get this guy to do a better job. You call him.
Yeah. There's, if you take that and stretch it out a little bit in terms of they're getting what they pay for, but I'm also careful to not get into stuff that I know is going to, like putting your foot in the snare. And I wanted to develop positive relationships with property managers, and this was from the very beginning, and that I just would not subcontract out snow plowing. That's just not anything that I would do, and the primary reason is a property manager calls you at 10 o'clock in the morning and says, where's your plow? I need you in my shopping center. And then you have to tell them, well, we're plowing somewhere else, and when we get through to that, we'll come to yours. You know.
Yeah, and they're more important than you are, so...
Yeah, and I can't bear telling my property managers that I'm not going to get to them for another 4 or 5 hours, and they're panicking because they've got lease requirements that their parking lot be accessible,
mm-hmm,
and safe. And so I just I don't subcontract that. I've had a number of offers from property managers to get into doing that, but I don't want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm depending on somebody else to keep my good name, and I can't guarantee that.
Mm-hmm.
With snow plowing, I've stayed away from it.
Well, I think that's a real good point that you're making here, is that if you can't subcontract something out and preserve your good name is certainly more important than whatever financial reward you might be able to get,
yeah,
from that side service. Do you find the referral is from property managers, from existing customers, is a big part of your business?
I'll answer that by telling you that I've grown in two or three different ways. One is that the property management companies we work for build shopping centers, and when they add a shopping center to their portfolio, they naturally bring us on. And that gave us phenomenal growth before the economy softened. Another way is that property managers move from one property management company to another, and they bring us, when they get to the new place, they'll bring us on board. And then the third way is these property managers all know each other, and that's a hyperbole, but they generally know each other, and they talk amongst themselves, and this property manager may mention to another property manager that doesn't use us, well, you really need to try Carolina Sweeper. They haven't had any issues with them. They do a great job, and blah blah blah. And so you get that. So I'd say those three things are about equal in how we've grown, is through the addition of new centers owned by property managers that we know, by them moving from one place to another and adding us, and by referral. They're all about 33% each.
Mm-hmm. And those are all great ways to be gathering new customers, as opposed to large Yellow Pages ads or mail outs.
I tried Yellow Pages and I didn't get a thing out of it, and so I quit. I tried for about 4 or 5 years, and it didn't do anything for me. And I think a big part of it is internet's so available now that people can just Google sweeping companies and get that. In today's generation, you know, that's particularly those in the 30s and 40s and even younger, but that's how they do stuff, is they go to the internet. Even people my age in 50s, I use that now, and that's a great way to do it. I've had to learn it more than the other folks who it's been a natural part of their growing up experiences, but
right. It used to be you could just walk into any place and say, can I may I use your Yellow Pages, but now you have to ask if they have one.
That's right, yeah. Do you have any Yellow Pages?
It used to be a given. That's
Yeah, I used to have two drawers filled with Yellow Pages, and now I've got one drawer with about three fossils in it.
Yeah, that's right. Is there anything else we should talk about? Is there anything that makes either your business unique that we haven't talked about, or that makes your market area unique in terms of the services provided?
Yeah, I think one thing that separates us from a lot of companies is that in our 12 years, we have not lost a single contract over quality. We insist on quality out of ourselves, out of our drivers, out of our equipment. That's our number one. That and safety are our number one focuses. Those are non-negotiables. And I mentioned earlier about growing from referrals from property managers moving. But I have to add a fourth now that I think about it, and that is property managers being dissatisfied with their current service, and that's another way we have grown is we don't have an active marketing program where we go knock on doors and solicit business, because we've grown at a rate that we're comfortable with, that we can handle and provide the quality without having to what the guys call stealing my business sort of a thing. But when property managers change from one company to another, I'd say we've probably lost three or four, I know it's less than five, in 12 years, because they look at the property and it's impeccable, and they talk to people about us and hear of our reputation. So we generally don't lose stuff. And like I said, every year we've shown positive growth in our sweeping, and it's primarily because of relationships we have and because we insist on quality. That's what drives this company.
Well, it seems like an excellent place to leave our interview, but I'd be remiss if I didn't add into that you put basically that foot forward on your website, too. I've always enjoyed the quote that you have quite central on your website, one that you have articulated during this interview numerous times, and one that was ascribed to one of our elder statesmen of the United States, Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, and that's not a marketing hype for us. That's what we look at. Well done is better than well said, and we let our work stand for itself, and it'll sell itself. I love that statement.
Well, I think it's central to your company. That's for sure.
Oh, it is. It is. It's a part of what we. It's a mantra.
Well, and it's.
We don't sit with our legs crossed and but it is a mantra. It's something I certainly live by.
Well, I think that the growth of your company and the professionalism of your company is certainly reflected in that, and I applaud you with that, Tom. It's certainly a good business model and the correct one to proceed forward and to be long-term successful with, so congratulations on that.
Thank you, Ranger, and I really appreciate being named Contractor of the Month. That's just coming from you. That's a real nice pat on the back. That means a lot.
Well, it's certainly an easy choice to make. No question there, Tom. We've been talking with Tom Dixon, and Tom is the president of Carolina Sweepers. They're located in Cary, North Carolina, in the Raleigh, North Carolina market area. And they are the World Sweeper Contractor of the Month for December 2012. And thanks again for your time.
Yes, thank you too, Ranger. Have a good evening.
You too.